Accession number 19068, Reel 5.
Mr. Ken Chesson, Reel 5.
We were allocated a mule, and so each mule was equipped with obviously it's a harness which consisted of a bridle, a halter, just to lead it. The bridle when you were actually using it and working it, and the saddle that was was a special sort of carrier saddle, so that you could have the pannier things on one each side. You could put on tanks, small water tanks, and carry water, or you could fix like a cradle round the ammunition boxes or other goods that you'd got to carry, such as mortar bombs or anything like that, and you fix that rein and you and it attached to this saddle, and add one each side, and that's how you carried the goods that, or equipment that you had to move around for the platoon or the company, which whatever you were with, and you had brushes, combs and brushes, so that you could groom the animal, and a water bucket for water and a bag, nose bag for its food, and a spike thing for cleaning out its hoofs, which was most essential to see that you could keep infection and that out of their hoofs, and then we were lucky, really. We had a small canvas tarpaulin that we had, that was to go in the monsoon time, that you put over any sort of essential loads that you were carrying, and you covered over with that. But we found them very useful when we putting up at night and wanted to build a bit of a shelter there, that especially where two of you were together, you could make quite a nice shelter with the tarpaulin sheets, and we made as best we could. We made a bit of shelter for the animals, mainly out of bamboo stuff, and it was surprising. They kept quite reasonably dry, and but it was really essential to look after the mules, to keep them as fit as ever you possibly could, it's always a bit of a joke about the mules and the muleteers, but they were absolutely essential there for getting the supplies through. A lot of these places that we had to fight through into these remote sort of huts and villages to turf the Japs out, there was no track, decent track or anything to get to them. It was a case, in a lot of cases, of cutting a bit through the jungle and getting there as best you could, and the mule was the only thing. The jeeps and trailers and the small trucks, the 4x4 trucks, and were very good if they'd got a track but to move along. But if in a lot of cases, as I've just said, getting through into the jungle and that, the mule was the answer for the transport. And we we worked hard. We done one very big scheme there, and we went right into some jungle. I can't remember the name, but that was then towards the Bombay area, and we went into some very very thick jungle country there, and the monsoons, it was terrific, and the scheme lasted, I don't know, a week or two anyway. But when we marched from there back to our camp at Nasik, and but there was very few of the chaps that was fit enough to march back. I was one of the lucky ones. Although I had very bad feet, I managed to get to march back, but there was very few that really did, and they'd got such bad feet, and they just had to take them out. Our CO wasn't very happy about that, but it was just one of those things. It proved really how fit you've got to be. But Darren, you know, we docked to Bombay in March, and it was really it was quite surprising. From I can't say exactly now when we were at Nasik. I should think it was. It must have been about August time, I would think. I'm not sure, but really, how the time seemed to go, and it was just really unbelievable. From the time we got off that ship. To what we had done in the time. I know we wasn't like a lot of chaps who were packed off and was in the fighting straight away, but we certainly we trained hard and worked hard, and we were getting really prepared, well, very very well prepared. The only thing there at Nasik, the sanitation wasn't good, and the food was really awful, and there was a lot of chaps there that went down with dysentery and yellow jaundice a lot, and of course that upset the battalion, because the numbers dropped, and of course they had to bring in then when it came for time for the division to move to go up into Burma, they had to bring in a lot of reinforcements then, chaps that wasn't really trained, and they hadn't really got the time to train a lot of them, because not that well, not as anything like we'd been trained, because it was a case of moving on to Burma. But the journey with the mules, they transported them by road and by rail, some of the where they could, but a lot of the time, I mean, we as muleteers, we had to do a lot more marching than the rifle companies and that, because they could go by transport, and but we done a terrific lot of marching really before we with the mules to get from from India, where from Nasik, that wasn't so bad. We started off in transport, but on the way there was a lot of places where we had to march and the others could go with transport, and taking it all through, when it, you took the whole lot through, and where we finished up in Burma, I mean, we just marched, you know, hundreds of miles really, and the first actions with the when you took the mules in, and that was quite a frightening thing, because they you really did wonder what the reaction of the animal would be, if like the shells, although we'd had good schemes, and that we'd had where we on this where we went to in the towards Bombay, in that area, the shells, we did have live shells coming over us, but it was different to bursting Ranju. But anyway, we were lucky really, because they always said to us, oh, with the mules you keep back a bit, so in a lot of cases we probably wasn't quite in the dropping zone of the shells, but it was all a case of getting the getting used to the change, the warfare, and wondering what the animal would be like. But really, in the main, the mules were very, very, you know, very good, better than one would have thought.
How much was it? How were you told about what your mission was all about and your destination would be? How much did you know?
No, we knew very little. The information that was passed back from headquarters back to the chaps on that was it was very poor really. Sometimes if you were with a sergeant or a corporal, you might and he might have a map, and he would point things out a bit to you and give you some idea, but so much in the main you didn't have any idea really, and it was just really a case of follow the leader, and a lot of these places we didn't really have a clue where we were going.
What knowledge did you have of other theatres of war that were going on around?
In the world, do you mean?
Around, you know, the Far East and.
Really, very, very little. The information and that was very much kept to just the officers and the senior NCOs. There was very little, and of course there was no distribution of any sort of news really. Later on, when things was getting better, you did get a paper called the SEAC, but I mean that was when we got that right towards the end, and when things was much more settled down. But after Mandalay, before we got anything where you really got information, you know, and you could travel, or you'd be fighting through. And of course, it seems so odd, really, but a lot of these places was you just fought really for a clump, almost just a clump of huts. But the Japanese, you know, they were there, they were in the jungle, nearly everywhere, really. And they would put up opposition, and therefore they had to, you had to get turf from out of it. And so therefore you, as I say, we travelled or marched miles and miles, really, because it was a case of going off the sort of main track or road, they called it, but I mean, to us, we'd only call it a track in down through central Burma, really, and you'd go off, and it was just a case of going along little old village tracks and cutting through the jungle and that, to get to these places. We left Nazik and made our way to the northeast frontier in September 1944. Late October, we arrived at Milestone 116 on the Imphal Kohima Road, and from there we moved on into Burma, over the Naga Hills and on through central Burma. And soon after that, we were engaged by the Japanese, and we fought our way down through the fighting was tough. There was one there was one place I can remember where we seemed to lose a lot of people, was a place called Cab Web. It didn't seem to be much of a place, but it was more just of a ridge of it was an advantage point, really, to the Japanese. And we lost sadly we lost quite a few chaps there, and from there, you know, we went on, and one a place that was a little bit more outstanding was a place called Swaybo. We took that, and we went on to Singdu, Madaya, and really it was all systems go from there to get to Mandalay. And anyway, I thought, well, really, this is going to be something to see some large built-up area. But it was quite funny, as we approached along this very dusty old road, and you could see the pagodas and that up on the hill, on our as we approached, it was on our left. And the officer that was in charge of the mule platoon, Lieutenant Davis. They'd got so short of officers that they took him away from us and put him into a rifle platoon. He was back leading a rifle platoon, and saw him along the side of the road, and I said to him, I said, well, are we nearly in Mandalay? I said, they say, oh, we're coming on to Mandalay. And he said to me, he said, well, I don't know any more than you. And I thought, well, this is good. But anyway, we pushed on, and a few tanks came up, and we seemed to be getting a bit more of a, looking like a more modern army, and we pushed on, and the part that we could see was the Mandalay Hill, and that was where the pagodas and things was up on the top, and there was quite a I can't remember the history well enough now, but there was evidently a lot of steps going up to there, and that's where the Japanese put up quite a fight up there, and some of our chaps they couldn't get the Japs out of the tunnels. They said there was geisha girls in there as well, but they had some drums of fuel. They set them alight and pushed them down into the tunnels. But anyway, as we got in, it was hard fighting to get into more into Mandalay. And as we got in, I mean, it was more interesting. It was not nice, really, modern buildings like we had out in this country, but it was quite a big place, and they pushed on, and then they had trouble there at the Fort Duffin, and the Japanese in there took quite a bit of moving, and walls were so thick that they couldn't penetrate them. They kept putting they brought in some big guns from the artillery, and with open sights they just fired there against the walls and hoped that they'd penetrate them, but they just didn't really make any impression at all. Anyway, it all came like that. I think the Japanese one night, I think they got out of the fort, after quite a bit of other fighting in the town or city, whatever they call it, there was it was conquered. But I know I was in the grounds of the Roman Catholic school there, and with our RSM, they'd got the ammunition in there, and I'd called in to get some more ammunition to take out, and we were very, very short of ammunition, so probably it was just as well that the Japanese did get out just about that time. But and I had my that was my 21st birthday. That was the 11th of March 1945, And I really wondered the way that they were dropping quite a few shells there in the green, and I really did wonder for a little while there long I was going to be 21. but anyway, we got over that one. And after Mandalay, we went on, and we went up to, we had a bit of fighting on the way, not too badly, and we went up to Mamio, which was Mandalay's hill station, and really a very very nice place. It was where the Europeans, a lot of the Europeans lived, and a lot of the government officials went for their holidays and that, and rest houses up there. And they had a lovely big lake, and a riding school, and we had about a week or so up there, and it was really good. They got good food. They got good food laid on, and it was a treat. And the RSM managed to get some beer in, and some rum, so that we had a drop of rum of an evening if we wanted it, and some beer. And we had a very nice week. It was a chance to get cleaned up and then press on again.
Was that your first experience of recreation time?
That was really very good, considering the way things went on. I think it was very good. They managed to get it organised and get it, and give us such a good week. So it was very well done. But an interesting thing, when when we were down by Mandalay Hill, there's been different photographs I've seen, and but this is our div commander. General Rees, he was only a very short man. We used to call him Chota Rees, Pint Pot Rees. But he was a Welshman, and he was a very, very good commander. And one of our muleteers called out to him when he was just along at the bottom of Mandalay Hill there. He got his jeep, and he was standing by his jeep, and he said, this chap, I can't remember his name now, but I can still visualise the man. And he was he was from up the Midlands. He was quite a cheeky chap, and he turned round and he said to the Di Rees, he said, when we gonna get a rest, he said. And he said, oh, Di Rees said, I don't know, he said. They've just given me goodness knows how many more miles of maps, he said. And so this chap turned round and said, well, you know what you can do with them. And that it was left at that. You use your own discretion. But I thought it was quite funny for an ordinary private soldier to be able to say that to a man of that rank and get away with it like that. But that is absolutely true. And I understand, you see, that really, if it hadn't have been for the war finishing as it did, we would have carried on from Burma through into either Indochina or Siam. That is where I think we were heading, really. And we left Maimeo, and then.